Water music on a Sunday morning from What's His Handle, as we invite you to imagine, if you would, a big vine-covered fence, and through the gate a garden with a brick pathway leading to a two-storey, 200-square-metre house with floor-to-ceiling windows and a long balcony. And now we can imagine that house floating, which it does, on the Rhine River in Germany. The couple who had that house built, and it's not a houseboat, it's a house that looks like a house, probably paid 10 to 15% more on building costs, reports the New Yorker magazine, but then they were able to sell their existing home across the road and live on the river instead. And I know you can't do that everywhere, but flooding costs economies billions and billions of dollars, and we're no strangers to part of that cost here in New Zealand. In fact, flooding accounts for more than 30% of the global economic loss from natural disasters. And given that flooding is set to get worse, not better, the concept of floating buildings comes into the future frame. And we're about to speak to a man who's designed more than 300 of them around the world. Houses, office blocks, healthcare centres, a real variety. His name is Koen Altes, the founder of the Dutch architectural firm Water Studio. And his ambitions are big. Already award-winning as a floating city suburb in the Maldives. The first houses have been built already and are floating merrily in place. Work on a floating development linked to a big city off the South Korean coast is scheduled to start later this year. Koen Altes has been feted in Time magazine. He's been on a list in Europe of the 100 people most likely to change the world. The capital of the Maldives has no room to grow without expanding into the water. Other cities are in the same predicament. And if you think more or less of the suburbs we live in now, with waterways, not roads, but pretty much everything else the same, that's the idea. Same shops, same doctor's rooms, same dentists, same parks, maybe smaller. So we're going to talk about the water suburbs, even the water cities of the future. Dr. Koen Altes, good morning.
Good morning.
Your name means old house, and here you are building the new houses we will all get used to.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, yeah. My name is Altes, and my grandfathers are already building houses for now, I think, almost 150 years. And we have to move on. It's not only on land. And of course, floating is, I think, the new way to go.
And on your mother's side, her family name is Boot, as in boat, and your mum and dad met on a cruise. So this is destiny right there.
Yeah, well, this is good inside information. Yeah, that's true. Yes, on my mother's side, they are shipbuilders for, I think, also like 120, 140 years. And for my grandfather, always taught me how to work with boats. And at some point, yeah, I was lucky to mix those two, houses and boats. So that was the new path I went on.
Can I ask you, just before we get into more nitty-gritty, the project in the Maldives, how's that going? It's a joint venture with the government there, yes?
Correct, yes. It's now, I think, already 11 years old. That means I think we are now, I think we have to know the fourth government we're working with. You have to see it like a kind of Lego. And the first blocks of Lego we have built. So you can already go there. You can visit these floating houses and see how that city on water would look like. I have to say, not typically my kind of architecture. We were forced to design something that refers to their old lifestyle, as you have as they had like 100 years ago on the old islands, sandy roads, colorful houses, palm trees on it. So we replicate that on these kind of floating platforms. Which is good, because you see the sand, you see the trees, but if you look underneath these platforms, it's just water. It's really floating.
They aren't like anything we might imagine. I mean, I think we imagine glorified houseboats, but you're building six stories high, aren't you, in Scandinavia?
Yes, but that's also because the need for higher density is there. If you really want to have it as a solution for climate change or the effects of climate change, if you wanted to have a solution for urbanization, which is now going on in every big city around the world, you just can't bring these kind of floating villas as you see them in the center of Amsterdam. We have to grow to high densities like floating apartment buildings, affordable housing. And on the water, it doesn't matter if you have one story or three stories or six stories. It's just about the foundation. As long as the foundation, the floating foundation, is large enough and stable enough, yeah, you can build small towers on the water. And that's a trend we are now moving towards.
Tell us how concrete foundations manage to float, please.
Well, you can imagine a boat, a wooden boat. It just floats. A steel boat, as we see ever, is also floating, and because it just pushes away the water. Now, imagine not having a steel boat, but a concrete boat, and not in a V shape like a normal boat, but in a box shape. Yeah, then you have your foundation for your building. So it's Archimedes, the laws of Archimedes, and that makes even concrete float as long as you have the right shape.
Right, and they're anchored in place by poles as well, aren't they? You have special poles.
Yeah, we have to. If you can imagine, if you make the whole kind of neighborhoods on the water, especially in the ocean, and the next day it's just moved 10 miles away, that doesn't work. So we have to tether them to the seabed, and of course in the lagoon we're going to build the floating city. The water is not so deep. Imagine it like 30 feet, 10 meters. That means that we have a series of piles in the water, and the city is connected to the piles, but still can move in a vertical way. It can move up and down. And that's fantastic because we have tidal movement, like a meter, like 3 feet on a daily basis. But we also have the bigger storms and even tsunamis, which we have to deal with in that location. And in the Maldives, they had a tsunami in 2004 with Christmas. In the Maldives, they are lucky that there's not that much of land mass. That means that the waves will never build up like 12 or 16 feet. They still stay quite small, but they go very, very fast over the water. That means that we have now designed it for the worst scenario. And that means that there will be a little bit of water damage, but never any personal damages. And that's how we deal with the tsunamis.
What's really interesting is that you say building on water is safer and sturdier than building on reclaimed land. And we have quite a bit of that in New Zealand as well.
Yeah. Well, it's depending where you are. At first, the difference between reclaimed land and floating land. If you want to make new land and there's only maybe water like 3 feet or 8 feet, yeah, then also you can just pour some sand in the water and make new islands. But if you are in deeper water, then at some point it doesn't make sense to keep on throwing sand in the water because that's not economically feasible. And also for the environment, it's much better than to switch to floating developments. When we don't know exactly what the future will bring, and that means in sea level rise, then it's better to go to floating developments because they can move up and down. And reclaimed island, reclaimed land, like we see in Dubai, or we see in Lower Manhattan, or we see in parts of the Netherlands, they still have to do something to keep their feet dry if we have another 5 feet, 10 feet of sea level rise in the near future.
Dr. Koen Aldhuis is talking with us. So if I was living in one of your little floating cities or floating suburbs in some cases, life would be much the same, except that instead of roads, there would be water.
Well, that's one of the differences. Definitely the houses will be the same because we place them on floating foundations. So they have the same look and feel and stability and cost and lifestyle. Of course, you will have much more water. So it's logic to have more transport over water, to take a water taxi or take your own boat and to move from over these canals. But what makes it even more interesting, I think, is the next step where we move to dynamic cities. So these floating neighborhoods on the water, they can move the elements. They can move these foundations. That means that we can make seasonal cities. That means in the summer, the city can look completely different than in the wintertime. And especially here in Europe, where in the winter we have ice and we have cold, then it's better to have these islands, these floating platforms with the houses closer to each other. And in the summer, you just move them away from each other, or you redirect them towards the sun, or you can really make new configurations. And that's something that I foresee for cities near water. that they become dynamic and they anticipate and react to changes in society and in climate and to seasons.
Could you also feasibly build floating parks, etc., as part of those floating cities? Could you do that?
Yeah, that's a good point. We don't build them from exactly the same foundations as we would use for our houses because that's too expensive. But we use them, as we say, almost from these kind of floating mattresses. These are large platforms, but they are not as rigid as the platforms for your housing. Those are much cheaper. And on that, we can just grow green trees. And also the green islands, they can again start to move. So there's a lot of flexibility, and there is a symbiotic relation with the underwater life. So where normal on land, you build everything above ground, and you don't care what's underneath you. Water is different. You have to make sure that also the underside of these buildings and parks that there is artificial coral or there is places for fish to have their habitats. Floating cities are more than housing. It's the green, the houses, the roads, and every public space that you can imagine.
It is hard to imagine, but I've read that the cost of individual floating houses in Europe is maybe normal cost plus 10 or 15%. What about building an entire suburb? I mean, is it feasible? Is it in terms of cost comparisons?
Well, I think today we lack the economy of scale. If you see how many houses are being built on land and how many are being built on water, then we still have to speed up. But in general, we can say that today these floating houses are 10 to 15% more expensive, and that's because the foundation is just a little bit more difficult. But I don't think you have to look at the cost of construction. You have to look at the cost of development. And in the city, it's very hard to find land or to buy land on which you can build your neighborhood. But water is much cheaper. So the total cost of development, which is the location plus the building on top of it, can all water be more feasible than it can be in the center of a city.
And people are already getting good resale value out of your houses, aren't they? When they, I don't know how many people have sold them, but when they come to sell, they get good prices.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. People evaluate waterfront much better, much higher than they did maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago. So it's that's also why many people 20 years ago maybe didn't want to live next to the water. It was definitely the Netherlands a place for more of the poor people. And now we see that there's a change towards that everybody wants to live as close as possible to the water.
Out of interest, I know this isn't what you do, but on floodplains, areas susceptible to flooding, would it be at all possible to build housing that floats when required to do so, do you think?
Yeah, well, actually, we do. So that means that you have two types. You have the foundation just on land. It has to be stable when there's not water, and when it starts to rise up, it also has to be stable and balanced. And that's difficult because people bring new furniture and new pianos, and then once in 10 years you get a flood, and then the house at some point starts to rise and starts to float. And then it has to be stable. So what we do now is we design dynamic foundations for which we can tune these situations. That means that once it starts to float, then we have these balanced tanks, which we can pump water in and water out, that even in this flood period, it's mostly maybe a week or 2 weeks, that also the house stays exactly balanced.
These designs of yours aren't all top dollar. I think in India you built something out of bamboo and cow dung.
Yeah. And one of their most precious assets is, of course, the livestock. And with our partners over there, we designed small floating islands with very, very cheap housing on it. And they are especially needed for the moments that there is a flood. And then the livestock is being pushed on top of these islands, and the islands move up and stay dry. And what we do there is we designed a recipe for everybody to copy and to use. And so it's not up to us to build thousands of them, but we try to educate people how to do that. And together with local authorities, we try them to accept and to allow and to permit these kind of rescue islands.
That's fascinating. Dr. Cornald Heest is with us, the founder of the Dutch architectural firm Water Studio. And you have a design, I think, for a floating forest in the Persian Gulf. Will that become a real thing?
Yeah. We hope. We want to find a solution for the humidity and the temperature in the cities. This was particularly about Doha in Qatar. And as you know, there the World Soccer Games were over there. It was really, really hot. And they think to have a large, large forest in front of their city. And then because of the evaporation of the water and the forest, then there must be a little bit more cooler air above that area. And if that then blows towards the city, then that should have an effect on the temperature in the city. They talk about really large platforms and forests. It's almost like, I think, 8 miles by 1.5 miles. So it's really, it's large. And inside are all these kind of, it's more like a grid of platforms with these mangrove forest on top of it. And then inside there's a lot of open spaces because you still need a lot of sunlight to hit the seabed. And although I'm not 100% sure that it will work, it is that innovation and that drive to have an effect on the effects of climate change is what makes me happy to do.
How do you cope with connecting to a city's infrastructure like sewerage systems, electricity supply, fiber connections and so on with floating buildings?
Yeah, well, that's the easy question. The more difficult question is you have to do it autonomous in open sea without any connection to the city. But if we do it in a city, we try to connect to the grid as soon as simple as possible. And the only difference is that we have to have flexible pipes. And we have to have some pumps. So our sewage is being pumped under pressure back to the sewage system on land. Water is just coming in, electricity is coming in. So it's they are all existing systems. You have to see it a little bit like a harbor. When a big cruise ship comes and docks to a harbor, they also connect and get electricity from land and they push their sewage out. So it's these are all just existing systems, which we just tune a little bit more for our neighborhoods. But it's definitely not the case that we have to design and to innovate all these systems. It's already there.
And the Netherlands now has 20 or so floating neighborhoods?
Yes, that's about it, yeah. I think it's not enough. If you see that we have almost 16 million people and that we are in need of 100,000 houses a year and that we only build like a few hundred on water, and we have maybe half of the country is near or close to water, it would make sense to build many more neighborhoods. But the Dutch, they have the technology, but they also are a little bit afraid of the water. And they for centuries, they've been fighting the water. And this change from fighting the water to living with the water is a big step. Yeah. So what we see now is that our technology is being exported to other countries, which are much more open for these ideas. And hopefully then by time it will come back to the Netherlands and then scale up to many more of these neighborhoods.
Yeah, understood. What about home maintenance costs? Do you need to spend more on a floating building as the years go by or not?
No. I think it's the foundation that has a little bit more cost, but depending on the material. If we do it in concrete, if we make floating foundation of concrete, it's the inspection. These concrete foundations have a lifespan of now 75 to 100 years without any problems. But for insurance and for permitting, you need to inspect these kind of foundations every 5 to 10 years. And that means you have some divers that go underneath it and see if it's still okay, which is mostly the case. If we build them from steel foundations, from barges, if we go to composite, then there's a different kind of maintenance. But the building on top of it, you have to see it is almost the same as a normal building on land. If I build a house close to the coast, then the same house I can also put on a foundation in the water. So it's, and maybe what is a bit different is that you have to reach those houses. So still, as there's a very large platform with a road on that platform, then I can reach my houses. But if there are single villas with only water around, then of course, maintenance is a bit more expensive than in a normal city.
I'm asking you lots of nuts and bolts questions, but you also have sparkling visionary designs, don't you? You're designing all sorts of shapes and different twists on housing now.
Yes, we do. Although I have to say that we try to step away a little bit from that because we don't want it to be seen as kind of freak architecture.
Right.
As any architect, of course, you want to make nice buildings and nice shapes, and you want to get a little bit. Now you have a big ego. That's what all the architects have. But I think that I would be ashamed that if in 20 years' time I look back and we have only helped like 100 families with a very nice villa. We really want to change the cities worldwide. We want to bring the next layer, the same as that we got electricity and we got cars and we got high-rise buildings. I think now is the time to also bring the blue layer, make sure that cities can grow over water. And I'd rather have maybe less exciting buildings, but let the city expand over water than only build the iconic and strange-looking architecture.
Yes. Yes, I knew that was your mission. But I was also reading about a clamshell-shaped floating hotel suite with curving glass windows and even a swimming pool for a client in Dubai. So I knew you did all sorts.
That's true, yeah. we have. But I think that this is also a mix. We have the crazy clients, which we adore because they have the money and they give us the possibility to innovate and to come with new solutions. But then the next step is definitely is how can you bring that technology to the mass? How can you use it for large scale, high density, low cost neighborhoods? And so there's always a mix between the extreme projects and the very cheap projects, between the luxurious ones and the high density affordable ones. And they all, as one family, have to make sure that this floating a lifestyle and these floating solutions for climate change and urbanization become a reality.
Yeah. Not just families, of course, as we've said, but the city of Rotterdam, didn't it commission a floating solar-powered dairy farm and cheese factory rolled into one?
Yes. Yeah, that was already 5 years ago. It was built by a friend of mine. He had this crazy idea to make a floating farm and to put cows on it. And he came to me and said, well, can you design this for me? And I thought, oh, I'm too busy and I don't believe in this idea. So I said no, and he did it himself. And now today it's one of the most successful enterprises within Rotterdam. They make cheese and they have their cows down the water. And now I'm lucky that now with them, designing the next phase and the next floating farms for other cities. So, but it's incredible that sometimes you have a client, if you have a friend that has even more crazy ideas than we have ourselves, and they become a reality. Yeah.
Well, so are yours. And you mentioned mobility before. You even envisage restaurants that could float to office locations at lunchtime and then towards residential neighborhoods at night. That sort of idea.
Yes, it's we think about dynamic cities, and in dynamic cities, we also think about functions that can move by themselves. And we are now in our company, we don't only have architects, but also have kind of a program guys who can just design that. And together with AI, we can know when, on which moment, which function should be in the city. And that it's all about the performance of city. Cities are a little bit slow, and it takes a lot of time to bring new buildings and to adjust to the new needs and demands. But on water, you can just add these functions, and they can start moving by themselves. So I definitely foresee a change in our cities, where these buildings start to move and to go to the location where they are needed.
So 13,000 housing units, I think, in your Maldives design, estimated to cost $1 billion US. You could do, if there was the money, you could also greatly assist the Pacific Islands threatened by rising seas, assuming they had some land left to essentially tether the housing to, yeah?
Yes, definitely. And we see many of these ocean nations that are threatened by water and they need some new technology. This is a process that in which money is of course important, but also how do you preserve culture? How do you preserve the ecology? So if you do this, you have to do it in time and as soon as possible, and bring these kind of large scale platforms, connect them to the still existing islands, and start having the ecosystem absorb these kind of floating platforms. So the moment when we have more water, that you slowly move part of these population and islands and ecology to these floating platforms, and that's that transfer. That will take, of course, decades, but something you have to think about today, and the technology is there.
Yeah, so when critics say, you know, you can't achieve sufficient scale and individual projects may work in good locations, but you won't be housing thousands of people, that's wrong. That's just plain wrong in your view.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, I really foresee that cities worldwide will start using the water. First, it will be the extreme high density cities where a million people live, like London, New York, Miami, Shanghai, Tokyo. All cities where there's a need for space and where the water is just an open location where you can expand the city. But once that has been done, then I definitely see this as a kind of recipe for all cities and all communities near water. And I think that in the end, we will see that people start to understand that living on water is maybe even more safe than living in a city on land being threatened by water.
It's a fascinating vision. Very good of you to talk to us. I understand, of course, floating buildings didn't used to have a great reputation. I was reading that the red light district in Utrecht once consisted of 43 floating brothels. I never knew that.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that was, and of course that has to do with regulations. They were not allowed to have some location on land, so they were moved to boats, and then these houseboats were the best place. So yes, that function also learned the community how to deal with floating structures.
Just finally, how did you get into this area? I know there's water in the family blood, or you know, the family genes, but when, at what point in your architectural career did you think, I'm going to be doing this? This is what I want to do.
Well, I think it was after a first year working at a very large office in Amsterdam. And as a young architect, I was full of energy and I wanted to build the most beautiful buildings. And I was only asked to bring some color or some small changes to existing buildings. And I saw that the Netherlands were now having trouble with finding space. There was all this water, and we had these houseboats. And I thought, why is it that these houseboats look so old, and they are not the same quality as normal housing? So I saw this market. We stepped in, and that within half a year, we saw that these kind of solutions are not only applicable on Amsterdam, but on every city worldwide where there's water. So there I started the vision. So it was a bit of frustration that on land I couldn't do what I wanted to do.
Great to talk to you. Great to hear your vision too. And thank you for being able to give us your time.
Thank you.